Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 374, recorded on Tuesday, June 19th, 2018, your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Florence Ion.
Dun, dun, dun. Two of us, but only two of us today, because Ron, very last minute, actually, sent us a message. He was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. I'm not feeling very well. I'll let you know. And pretty soon after that, he was like, you know what? I got to call it. You know when it's not right.
Yeah. It didn't feel right.
And if he had to taste today's Oreo flavor, he probably would have vomited. So,
teaser for the end of the show.
You don't want to miss it.
Don't want to miss it.
Joining us, returning to this show, it's been far too long.
Yeah,
we need
really
to have
has.
You back more often than this. David Ruddock, AndroidPolice.com. How you doing, David?
I am doing well, and I notice we all have Pixel Books.
Oh, you're right. We do. I need
to.
I have a Pixel Book pen that I never use. I have it in my bag. You can use it and never use it too.
Mine's in tablet mode. I'm using it for the show notes.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, hey, so then we're all using the Pixel Book. You've had it for a couple of weeks now. Well, probably like a month now.
Mm-hmm.
David, how long have you been using the Pixel Book?
Well, since they sent out the review in it. So late October last year.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm tenting mine.
You're tenting.
No good reason, and it's not choosing to cooperate.
God, your phone was under it.
Yeah, that was.
I feel like I should hyperventilate.
Yeah, I very well could have scratched my screen. Whatevs. So what do we think? If you've been using it since October, I've been using it since about the same time. Flo, you're a relative newcomer to the Pixel Book.
But I have been using the Asus Chromebook Flip, and I will say that this is definitely an improvement.
It's
and
nice,
you can definitely tell that when you pay more money for better specs, it comes across in overall performance. And I now work primarily on this.
Yeah, you can.
I work primarily, right? And now I put the Windows PC on another table because I still have to do like all my photo editing and testing, you know, on that rig.
That's kind of the limitation that you end up with.
Well, this one can handle Lightroom a little better.
Yeah.
So I have to ask, is everybody on the same page with me as far as the keyboard goes and it being absolutely a dream to use?
Yes.
I love the keyboard.
That's why I use it, because
it's so good.
I'm a writer just writing.
Especially because my wife not too long ago got the new MacBook Pro and basically those keys have like zero travel to them whatsoever, and they've got this ticky-tacky sound that's just super annoying. And then I type on this thing. So nice to type on.
It's wonderful.
I can't imagine that. And you know, I like when you're talking about the specs on this device, like you're paying more, but the feel and the experience that you get, like from the touchpad as well, like on some of the lower cost, the lower quality Chrome OS tablets that I've used, the touchpad is a dead giveaway.
Awful.
Like the level of the quality of the hardware. And if it just feels like a toy, like a plastic toy when you're using it, that's no good. This one is great. So,
and these things have Intel chips in them, right? So
they do.
Yeah.
They're the Y series iCores. Yeah. So it's pretty fast. I would say this is a pretty quick laptop just overall.
Yeah. Now, okay, so this is an Android show. These are Chromebooks, yes, but they also run Android apps. Are any of us living inside of Android apps to any degree on the Chromebook, the Chromebook Pixel? Or the Pixel Book. That's the new name of it. Sorry, I got that wrong. David, what do you think?
The only one I really use on any kind, there are two. The one I use personally on a regular basis is Facebook Messenger, because there are no Facebook Messenger clients really for most operating systems. As far as I know, macOS doesn't even have one. So, and if you've ever used the web version of Facebook Messenger, like it's kind of garbage. So having Facebook Messenger notifications be able to pop up natively in the operating system is really great. I mean, I don't love Facebook Messenger, but if I have to use it, that's what it's great for. I also use it to watermark photos, an app called I believe it's called, oh, what is the name of it? I'm going to find it here. It is really, really obscure and bad.
but it does the trick.
Add watermark. And the only reason I use it is, and I know this applies to like nobody who's not a photographer or like a journalist, it does batch watermarking. And so that's how I do batch watermarking on my Pixelbook because the Lightroom doesn't support it.
Yeah, not this version of Lightroom.
So this is Add Watermark by Android Villa. Is that it?
It's got a purple and blue logo with like a splotchy thingy. Yeah.
Add watermark.
It looks like a Nickelodeon logo.
It has a phone UI. It's just a tiny little thing. It's so janky, but it does work. It supports transparency and rotation and placement and scaling and everything. So it's all the basic stuff you'd want for watermarking. And once I found it, I realized, wow, I can do my entire job at a trade show on the Pixelbook.
$219 if you want to go pro on that one.
Support or your there's devs.
A, the free version. But this does remind me of one of the things that I find annoying about the Pixelbook in my daily use. That's it. Add watermark free, and then there's a pro version for $219. One of the things that I find annoying, and maybe you guys know the way around this, is very often, like I've gotten really accustomed at my desktop or whatever computer I happen to be on, when I hear of an Android app, I load it up in the Play Store on my browser, I hit install, select my device. Now I have to authenticate who I am, and then it gets downloaded to my phone immediately. This comes up sometimes when I'm on the show and I don't have the app that I need to install, you know, from somebody else until the show is underway. On a normal browser, I can do that, and then it'll say, what device do you want to install it to? When I do this on a Pixelbook, because it runs Android apps, it assumes I want to install it on the Pixelbook.
Yeah.
So when I try to do that, there's no way for me to like push it. So then instead of me doing it right here where I already have it up, I have to then open my phone and go to the Play Store and search for the thing.
So wait, you're in the Play Store app. You're not in the Play Store in the browser.
I just did a search and it took me here. So how do I? So
you got to open it in the browser, play.google.com.
Yeah.
Because you're in the app.
But I just went to Google search.
Yeah, but you can do two instances of the Play Store at the same time. So you can do the Play Store Chrome app, and then you can do the Play Store in Chrome
watermark.
Browser.
Okay, so but I'm happy that I brought this up then.
I agree with Jason that this is like a major confusion point
right.
for users.
Yeah, right. There we go. Now I can do it. I never thought to
it
do
is,
that.
You're right, David. It's super confusing. Like that's not user-friendly for a person who maybe bought a Chromebook because it was cheaper.
I mean, but maybe it makes sense. I mean, the OS is designed now to run Android apps, so they want to make it feel as seamless as possible. So great, here's that app that you can now install on your
laptop. Yeah, but if you're telling me to buy an ecosystem of devices, I mean...
Yeah. Man. You know, we're just making excuses for Google. That's what we do here.
Sometimes. Hey, that's my job.
I don't know about that.
Sometimes. We all do a little bit of it. By the way, did I mention Ron not feeling good? Did I mention that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Ron,
because we're
if you're still not feeling good, I'm sorry, buddy. Feel better. We'll see you next week. Get some rest. This week, we're going to be discussing Xiaomi's chances in the U.S. market. David actually wrote an article about this. Very interesting stuff. Also, the Oppo Find X that has a very interesting solution to the notch dilemma. Google Podcasts is now a thing. Google's third attempt at podcast app. Android messages for desktop. Substratum's doom that it is meeting with Android P. And we have a bunch of your emails. We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about today. But we don't really have a news segment. It's really this episode is more hardware and apps, but I didn't want to leave you hanging, Victor, because I know this is your moment to shine. So it's time for the hardware news.
So I heard you still like Android news, so I'm gonna slide in some more.
What did Android you want? What in the I don't even know what I just that's amazing. Play that again. You can choose or choose not to do the VO. I just want to see the graphic. That was amazing.
And very related to one of our news topics today.
Holy cow, dude.
Or hardware topic.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed Ron's not here to see this.
Yeah.
See, look, I even found bezel-less and all that stuff.
Wow, that phone is beat up. That's the most beat up bezel-less phone I've ever seen.
That phone has been enjoyed.
The case for bezels.
dude, that is awesome. I'm kind of in awe right now.
That's really cool.
That's why I came into your office earlier and asked you if we were still going to...
Yeah, because you looked at the dock and saw I didn't have any news portion. You were like, wait a minute. I just spent all afternoon working on a bumper. I had no idea you were making that, though. That is amazing, Victor. I love it. Anyone who isn't watching the video has to go and check it out and see just how talented Victor is. Thank you for doing that. So let's talk about some hardware news. It's kind of both. This sits on both sides. David, you wrote a post. You had a brief time, I guess, with the Xiaomi Mi 8. You were at a press event and you got to take a look at the hardware. So I thought we'd, you know, talk a little bit about what you thought about the hardware. And then also you wrote an article about this with a very specific point. We can talk about that. But first of all, what did you think about the Mi 8 in your short time with the hardware?
Well, I think that Xiaomi's Mi line of phones, which are the mainstream, relatively premium, smaller handsets they make. Xiaomi makes a lot of phones, but these are the ones where if you're looking for an analog in China to the iPhone, Xiaomi's Mi, like the Mi 7, Mi 6, Mi 5, going back probably to the Mi 4, I think. I'm not sure if the Mi 3 was really an iPhone knockoff, but basically this is the phone they sell saying where the pitch is, hey, do you want an iPhone for under $300? We've got you covered. And that's what the Mi 8 is. And I feel like that was really what most people who looked at the phone and announced the phone talked about. Wow, this looks like an iPhone X. And it kind of does. The camera module on the back, the notch display, the Explorer edition of the phone, which is the special one that costs a lot more money, has a 3D facial recognition scanning feature, just like the iPhone X. It's a bit shameless. And if you look at the Chinese version of their software interface, it looks pretty iOS-y, and it's not flattery at this point. This is Xiaomi is catering to probably a market that is substantial in China, people who want an iPhone but don't want to pay $1,000 for an iPhone X, which is understandable. And they definitely seem to be playing to that with this phone, and I think they were pretty rightly called out for it. But the thing is, Xiaomi doesn't sell phones in the United States. It really doesn't sell that many phones in the West. They've just expanded into Europe, and that is a very new thing for them. They're mostly still in Southeast Asia, so China and India being their two largest markets, and the Mi 8 will probably focus in terms of its marketing effort on those two countries. So we're outsiders looking in, certainly, but Xiaomi really wants the Western press to pay attention to its products, and the Mi 8 is interesting, and when you look at the price point, and then you look at what's inside it, which is the latest processor from Qualcomm, you know, relatively high-end imaging sensors. It has two cameras on the back, this 3D face scanning thing on the Explorer edition. All in all, it's really impressive what they do for the money. I don't think it can be argued that Xiaomi is not making a good case in terms of hardware features versus value dollar. I think that they do that very well. But they have their other shortcomings, and I think those kind of stood out as they were walking us through the larger Mi ecosystem of products.
Yeah, you definitely you mentioned in your write-up, I think, one of the bigger challenges outside. Well, maybe it's not a bigger challenge, equally large challenge. Like, on one hand, you have the hardware aspects, the feature set aspects that translate so that almost become a mirror of, you know, competitor hardware here in the U.S. if that device were to release here. Apple would have a field day with it, right? Because there are so many reasons why it looks and seems to operate in a very similar way. Like you say, not to the point of flattery, but it feels a little bit more, you know, along those lines. But also about the software, and you mentioned something about this MIUI that they are using is really, it's a software layer that works in that particular market. If that software layer were to be the software layer that we got here in the U.S., it probably wouldn't stand a chance, right? And that becomes a big hurdle for them to have to overcome. In order for it to work in the U.S., you'd have to have, I would imagine, the U.S. market would require there to be Google services built into there the way that everybody expects these phones to have them. And if that's not there and it's some, it's some alternative UI that's completely detached from everything Google's doing, that pretty much makes it dead in the water unless they can change that, right?
Yeah, but Xiaomi does ship their phones in all non-China markets with Google Apps. They've been doing that for a couple of years now. They are a Google Services partner. I think what really speaks to me about their software is the fact that we were using Chinese ROM, so Chinese software phones at this event, and Xiaomi's PR reps were very careful to say, well, this is China software. There are no Google services on here. It's preloaded with a bunch of stuff that will only come on the phones in China. Don't worry about it. When you get the global version of the phone, it'll be Google services and there won't be all this extra stuff on there. And to me, you know, when I'm thinking about what Xiaomi's offering, their argument is, if you buy a Xiaomi phone, you want to buy all this other stuff that Xiaomi makes, or I shouldn't say makes, all this other stuff Xiaomi sells, which they don't make, you know, this ecosystem of accessories. So they have these services and they have all these other products. Like, they make the most successful air purifier in all of China. Mm-hmm. Air purifiers are wicked popular in China. I mean, you probably, you know, if you're from America, you probably don't just understand how popular air purifiers are there, but given air quality concerns in China, they really are, and Xiaomi's had wild success there. They also work with, but they don't make that air purifier. Another company makes it. So Xiaomi makes routers, it makes phones, and I believe they make the tablet and laptops they've announced, but that's really it. Everything else is made by partner companies. They certify as part of their Mi ecosystem. And the idea is, you buy these Mi ecosystem products once you have a Xiaomi phone, and you pay for subscription or in-app purchase services that enhance these products or provide the necessary services for them to work consistently. And Xiaomi says that's how we want to make money. We want to sell people services. Hardware is just how we get them into the service ecosystem. And as I'm sitting here looking at all the stuff they're showing us, for example, like a laser HD movie projector, a bunch of Philips Hue lights, an electric toothbrush with an app, motion sensors, smoke detectors, it's really anything. They have pillows they sell under the Mi brand. The pillows aren't smart, but they're just pillows. They sell them. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, this is all fine and great, but if you are telling me that Xiaomi has serious ambitions in America, these areas, these product spaces are all saturated immensely. There's intense competition. You know, you're going up against Amazon, you're going up against Google and Apple, and then probably a dozen smart home companies that really probably don't have any interest in giving you a cut of their revenue because they're pretty well embedded here. And so it just kind of feels like a fantasy that way when they say, oh, we're very serious about coming to America. We don't plan to make any money on phones. We just want to sell you all this other stuff. And so looking at the phone, and the idea of the value proposition is you buy the phone and you're getting the value out of all these other services, and that's how Xiaomi makes money. I just don't understand how Xiaomi could ever really work here. Hmm. Google, they don't make any money from Google, at least not a – I would say they probably make a nominal amount of – I really can't say that word right now.
A nominal snowman.
A nominal amount of money from Google through their Google Apps agreement, but it's probably not much.
Yeah.
And so – realistically, Xiaomi's pitch here to sell phones is, we can offer you really great hardware at a really great price. And most Americans buy their phones on contracts and installment plans. And honestly, I look at what OnePlus is offering, and I'd rather have the OnePlus phone than any of these Xiaomi phones personally. But that may be a more subjective take. But I didn't leave convinced that the business model can work here. Hmm.
Did you get a chance to see the Explorer Edition with the fake but see-through translucent backplate?
I did, and I think that it looks interesting. I think that whoever came up with that idea definitely deserves a raise. I think that it's great marketing, and much like their in-screen fingerprint scanner, which I watched somebody try to enroll a fingerprint in that, and it didn't go smoothly. So I remain unconvinced by that technology. I think Xiaomi has done some interesting things. And I think, again, for the money, the hardware they come up with is very impressive. I'm just not sure that they really have a place here in the U.S., even though they seem to really want us to think that. But the Explore Edition, you know, that kind of fake see-through thing, I shouldn't say fake. It's actually see-through. And you're seeing...
But it's also fake.
it's fake and real. And it's just... They waffled so much around what the see-through element really is that... At this point, you may as well just say, well, there's some stuff in the phone and it's got logos painted on it.
Yeah.
That's about the most truthful thing you can say about it.
Totally. Totally.
Are we ever going to see any permeation from... Well, hold on. I got to roll that back because we have seen OnePlus has made it over here. I mean, we're going to get to that in a bit. Like, mm-hmm. they've managed to sell a lot of phones.
Yeah,
but I mean, are we going to see any permeation from these Chinese brands that are just... like, I just feel like every time they talk about coming to the United States is always with some like cockamamie idea that is just completely against like the consumer culture we already have here. And well, I mean, we're stuck in our ways. You can't get us to change.
Even when it seems like they have it all figured out, we realize eventually that they don't. You draw the comparison, and I realize that's a big generalization. But what I'm talking about specifically is the Echo comparison.
They wanted subscriptions too.
You know, they had this whole ecosystem play kind of approach as well. We see how that worked out for them. They had other issues. Xiaomi doesn't seem on the surface to have nearly the same amount of issues right from the get-go that the Echo had. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A better foundation. We're there, so we might change around the order. So go ahead and talk about the OnePlus.
Well, okay. So yeah, the good news is that the OnePlus has sold 1 million units in 22 days, which is quite an impressive feat for the company.
Wow.
They were celebrating on Twitter. This is the fastest phone that's ever sold for the company. OnePlus 5 and 5T took 3 months to reach the 1 million thresholds. And I guess the question is, what are they doing this time around? I mean, are they doing anything different, or is it just that we've had enough iterations of OnePlus? There's been enough time for the brand to really incubate here, you know, and they've put out good product.
Yeah.
Great product,
yeah,
I should say. And now we call the OnePlus like the Nexus, you know, the Nexus phones that we don't have anymore. So it's like, Is that it?
What are they doing right? What do you think, David? Do you think that they've just established enough of a brand identity in the markets that they serve that those same people are coming back for more? Or are they actually getting new people, which is what they really need to do if they want to expand?
Mm-hmm. I think their success in America, they say they're up 137%, something like that, year over year in America on the 5T sales. I don't think they've released any specific sales figures for North America in terms of the 6. I do know that they are essentially going toe-to-toe with Samsung in India now, which is crazy. Like, I would not have ever predicted that happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand the Indian market is very value and spec-oriented, but OnePlus success there has been probably even beyond what they expected. And I think that's mostly where that figure is coming from, which is not to belittle it at all. I just think that OnePlus has had unprecedented success in India, and I think that's why they've been focusing on that market quite a bit. And that's great. Like, that it shows that their business model is working in a particular environment. Whether or not they're having any more pickup here in the US with the 6 versus the 5T, I don't know. They're not releasing those figures. That said, I mean, from a kind of hype standpoint, I felt like the 6 probably didn't really do the numbers and the kind of level of interest for us that the 5T did. But I always feel like that's the case with OnePlus since the 3 and the 3T. The slightly better the version of the phone that comes out later in the year, people tend to be more interested in because the initial release has been proven the first time around. So if they do a 6T, which I would honestly be surprised if they don't, I think that we'll see that interest continue to grow. I think OnePlus is doing great things. I think that they do still have their occasional issues, major OS updates. We'll see how they handle P. I know they are part of the beta release, which is encouraging. But whether or not that will translate into speedy updates to P for the 5, 5T, and 6 in the months preceding the official P launch, you know, later this summer, we'll have to wait and see. But I really do think they are making the most cogent argument for buying an unlocked phone in the United States, maximizing value, maximizing your specifications with as little compromise as possible. I think camera is the one area you really compromise with them. But as long as you can get past that, and honestly, the 6 has the best camera of any OnePlus phone yet. As long as you can get past that and you aren't on Verizon or Sprint.
that's another big caveat.
that is a major caveat, yeah. Certainly.
I was going to say.
I do think their phones, I love a lot of what they do. The fast charging, their first party cases, the cases they make for those phones are great. Yeah. They're really, really good. And I just don't think you get that from a lot of other brands, even Samsung. Samsung's not making cases as nice as OnePlus, which is saying something. So yeah. I think their success is hard earned.
Yeah. I would completely agree. And I like their strategy of releasing the flagship and then 6 months later releasing an updated flagship.
There you go, Tom Brokaw.
Thank you for your support. I think that strategy is obviously working for them. You know, some people want to have the next big thing, and the 6 is a really great upgrade. They put a lot of thought and time into, you know, creating a design that feels luxurious, especially for the price point. And then they'll come out with one 6 months later that maybe the one 6 months later, you know, it has just a few really nice solid tweaks. It's not a major needle mover, but it's enough to have those people that were sitting on the fence before finally decide to pull the trigger. And either way, people are pretty happy with what they get because the upgrade from one to the next is good. And it's all within a year, which can't be similarly said for a lot of other OEMs where they have a hard time with, you know, or they release so many that it all gets lost in the noise.
Well, and OnePlus has really focused itself on having like a premium device. So, I mean, they have the slight little offshoot, the OnePlus X, which will forever be my favorite low-end phone. That was like my favorite. I just love that phone so much.
The OnePlus X.
Yes.
Trying to remember the OnePlus X. Why am I not remembering this?
Yes, the OnePlus X.
Oh, okay.
It was
2015, October
2015. That was 3 years
this
ago.
This one was not out for very long, though.
It was not out
for
very long.
It was released, yes, it was discontinued like a few months after it was released.
Yeah, it was a quick release, but it was so nice in person, and I just really liked the idea of this like $200 premium seeming phone that actually worked pretty nicely. But you know, why focus on that stuff when you could have a bunch of flagship hits? And that's what they did.
Sure.
And they're just doing the same thing that Samsung does, really, which is launch a phone, you know, in late spring now. Mm-hmm. That was late spring, or spring is later now. Thank you, climate change. And then launch something around the holidays when people are buying phones again.
Yeah, hardware season.
It's another big time.
Go up against Google and, you know, the Note and everything like that.
Yeah.
Speaking of Samsung, Samsung's fabled foldable smartphone device could happen next year. We keep hearing this. I feel like every time we talk about it, it's next year. Whatever year you're in, it's the next year. Could be very expensive. The Korea Times report says next year is likely. Estimates the cost at around $1,850, nearly $2,000, which I don't know. Like, that seems difficult for me to imagine or understand. But I think the real sad trombone here is that the display, according to this report, anyways, this is all, you know, rumory stuff. The display wouldn't actually be foldable itself, but two separate displays that fold together
like
the ZTE Axon M. Also, it would have an outside 4.3-inch panel kind of like the cover of a book, but inside when it's unfolded, it would be about 8.3 inches of screen separated in the middle.
Inside?
Yeah.
So there's three screens on.
So basically, according to the report, when it's folded up, you'd have your outside screen that is your normal 4.3-inch panel, you know, for phone things, and then you'd open it up, and on the inside, you'd have two different screens with, I'm assuming, a hinge down the middle. Although the report says there won't be a hinge, but I don't know how you do that without a hinge when the screen isn't actually folding. It's two separate screens, so I'm confused. I don't know how this is any different from the Axon M.
I don't want it.
Which who wanted the Axon M?
Don't bring it if it's going to be like the Axon M. Just don't.
Yeah.
Especially
after all this time. Like,
I don't know.
Years just, come on. In the making.
We saw videos like years ago of actual foldable display.
But
it happen.
Well, actually foldable displays, but then you ended up with this like puckering and dimply thing.
Okay,
so take that
to the drawing board.
So my theory on this, so Samsung actually, this even wouldn't be the most expensive smartphone they've released, by the way.
It's true.
So these crazy foldable, the flip phones they've released in China, the Galaxy Flips, they've retailed for over $2,000.
Really?
I believe there's a special gold version in China that was like $3,000. Right. I don't think there's any real gold involved. I think the idea was just that it's special. Anyway, as far as I heard today, there's a story that they had canceled the kind of Axon M concept idea, and that the Galaxy X, whatever that is, was still on the table.
Okay.
That said, if they are doing a foldable thing, I can absolutely see them doing a Korea-only launch, essentially.
Yeah.
Samsung has done that in the past with phones like the Galaxy Round, which, if anybody remembers that is the taco phone. So it curls up.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of the LG G Flex, if you remember that. It curls up in a way, it's really weird. That phone cost $1,000 at the time. So I would not be surprised if this is kind of a weird, funky Korea-only fan release thing where they know they're going to get a positive reception and generate hype, essentially. But it is, I agree, it's sad that they haven't gone with the truly flexible design. If it's hinges, that it's dead on arrival.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's taken this long to get it right, maybe it just doesn't deserve to be released. Maybe it doesn't deserve to happen at this point. I feel like no matter what, there's been so much pent-up expectation and daydreaming about what it could possibly be that no matter what, like it's a loose scenario. You come out the other end and people are going to be like, really? That's what we waited this much time for? I don't know if foldable phones are our future. I don't know if we teach them well and let them lead the way, if they're going to show us all the beauty that they possess inside.
I don't know. I keep seeing all this tech in TV shows. It's like where's all this? I don't know. Just make a book of ideas and pick one.
Yeah, like a phone.
Yeah,
just a phone.
Just
like the Oppo Find X or 10.
Yeah,
I don't know. What is it?
So if you're sick of notches, well, I guess this is a solution. How about a slide-out camera? Something that kind of embeds nicely into the chassis, you know? That's what the Oppo Find X does. It's a slide-up. There's an animated GIF on the screen.
It's so fast. It's like, but this is a better animation. So what are we looking at here? What's going on?
What is going on? That is a pop-up camera. So inside that little module is a dual 16 20 megapixel rear-facing camera with a 25 megapixel front-facing selfie camera embedded inside a motorized slide-out tray. Oh. And that's how it works.
This is how you unlock the phone.
That's how it works in real time.
This is how you unlock the phone, by the way. There is no fingerprint sensor. So in order to unlock the phone, you swipe up on the screen.
Yeah.
The camera appears and does a facial recognition and then disappears.
So apparently it opens in under 0.5 seconds.
Is that fast enough?
Which is...
No.
So under half a second.
It's not fast enough.
Which doesn't seem fast enough.
I mean, I feel like looking at this GIF here, I feel like... Wow, that's some Westworld stuff going on.
It is.
And I don't want it. I don't need that. I don't need any motorized action on my phone ever. I love that GIF.
Yeah.
That GIF's so much better.
I feel like the mechanical aspect, anytime you bring mechanical like operation into your smartphone, which our smartphones are already delicate to begin with, there's moving components. I just feel like that's a bad
just needs to stay
sign.
A brick. Just needs to stay a brick. For those of you who are interested in some of the specs that are inside, Snapdragon 845, 8 gigs of RAM. So that's a 6.4-inch 1080p screen that you're looking at. It's OLED bezel-less. So there you go. No bezels. 256 gigs of storage, Android 8.1 Oreo, 3,700 milliamp battery, and no headphone jack. And it's available in China today with no pricing, but eventually it will come to North America and Europe.
Yeah. No, Burke, there is no notch screen on the pop-up part. Although that would be a nice troll. The pop-up thing comes up and there's a little notch up there.
Notch, no notch.
Mine doesn't have a notch.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yours is the future.
And that's basically a 4K screen and a small one, so.
Yours is the future. You are a visionary. Victor, that's why. I'm curious to see it, to see just how. And actually, what did we talk about last week? There was another one that had the pop-up camera. So this is
another Oppo, wasn't it?
It was the Vivo.
Oh,
it was
Vivo. The Vivo. Okay, it had an O in the end.
Yeah,
that was close.
Oppo, Vivo. Maybe it was
it's
a couple.
The Vivo
weeks ago.
Pez dispenser. That's
basically
what that phone is
with Android P Pez. So this is obviously a trendy thing, apparently. You're either going notch or you're going slide-out thing. And I think in the slide-out thing side of the aisle, this is better than the tiny little camera that appears that looks like it would hurt if you hit it the wrong way.
So just to recap of what we've been talking about in the last several minutes of the show, we've been talking about foldable screens, pop-up top of the smartphones.
Pop-up trays. For camera components.
And pop-up cameras. Do any of these sound enticing to any of us? Because I'm not really enticed.
It seems like a lot of this has to do with broadening our screen real estate. So are all of these concessions important enough for broadening our screen, giving us more screen real estate? I guess that's the question. I don't feel like I need a pop-out camera to get rid of that tiny little bezel up at the top. But then now is not 2 years from now when we're super used to not having that space up there anymore. You know what I mean?
Oh, you think that's going to be us 2 years from now?
Two or three. Well, I mean, right now we're very used to the bezel-less sides. And I'm sure 2 or 3 years ago, us would have been saying like, that looks kind of neat, but it's not necessary. I don't mind having bezels on the side, blah, blah, blah. And now like we're super used to it. It's hard to go backwards. So I'm just saying we'll probably be in the same place a couple years
from now. Do you know how hard it is to move icons from screen to screen without a bezel on the side? It's really hard for me.
Man.
To just drag it and hold.
And to go all the way to the edge.
Hold until it moves.
What do you think, David?
Well, my video feed is frozen, but I do look skeptical. So
I thought you were judging us. I thought you've been judging us for the past 5 minutes.
Just say some nice bokeh on that shot.
Yeah. I feel like when I look at these sorts of things, I the question I ask, is this improving the experience of using your smartphone in any kind of substantial way? And the answer is obviously no. This one probably makes it worse. And even if it doesn't make it worse in somebody's opinion, it definitely is not making it better. I don't see any way this makes using your smartphone better.
Yeah.
It's a moving part, which is just something else to break.
Yep.
Not that I think that there's anything inherently unreliable about these little electric motors that they're using. I just think that it's a gimmick. And when it comes to gimmicks, Oppo has a history. If you remember their N series of smartphones, the very first one didn't have a motorized camera, but it had a camera you could flip physically with your hand. I remember that because I went to China to see that phone, and I vaguely remember being there. But then they came out with a sequel. And that one had a motorized flip action.
Yeah.
And so you would press the flip button, the camera UI, and it would just flip the whole camera sensor around. And I just thought, wow, this seems like something, A, that could break, and B, I'm not getting anything else out of this that I'm not getting out of a front-facing camera. It was just Vivo and Oppo both feel like companies that are definitely on the forefront of engineering for engineering's sake. So,
and was it's Vivo fun. Was Vivo the first? So we've been talking about fingerprints sensors being behind the display. Vivo was the first one with the concept and then eventually like released it when everybody was thinking that Apple was going to do it with the next iPhone, right?
Yeah, and that's using Synaptics technology.
Right.
So Synaptics is their supplier, and I remember at CES I actually looked at that and they showed me that Vivo concept phone with Synaptics technology in it. So and then Oppo. So Oppo and Vivo have this very interesting relationship where they're owned by the same parent company, but they're technically competitors. So it's kind of like a Hyundai Kia thing, right, where like they're the same car, but not really. And also they would definitely prefer. The other company would definitely prefer you to buy their car. So it's interesting to see how they basically come up with two takes on the same concept of a bezel-less phone.
Huh. I wonder what the strategy is there then when you're doing that.
Making money.
Making money, but pitting both of your business units against each other with their own innovations. Like if one figures it out and cracks the code, does the other company then do that too? Because now they're
they share technical resources, as far as I'm aware. So there's software and like, you know, board designs and all that, you know, supply relationships. That's all that all seems to be shared.
Wow.
And they also have the same master, so they have to make the master happy. And well, that certainly brings a lot of competition to the table. You know, brother versus brother.
Yeah. I think I know. All right. Let's move on from hardware into apps. We're going to do some magic and work on David's video here. While we're getting David back, we're going to talk about a little podcast stuff.
Hey, so I used this app on the way here.
Oh, you did?
I did.
So this app would be Google's podcast app.
Yes.
What did you think?
I thought it was very confusing that it wasn't available for me on Android I/O. So I didn't use Android Auto on the way here. But don't worry, I didn't touch my phone while I was driving.
You queued up a podcast on Google's podcast app. And
yeah, so I'm going back through Beverly Hills 90210, you know, my favorite show in the entire land. Yeah. And also listening to my girls at the 90210 Blaze, who did podcasts for that. So, you know, I wanted something to listen to on the way here. And so I decided it would be a good way for me to try out the Google Podcasts app. And I mean, thus far, like, the best thing about it is the interface, really.
Yeah, I mean the interface,
I really like how simplistic it is.
It is. It's a pretty app.
Yeah. All right. You got up at the very top, you got kind of a list of the podcasts that you're subscribed to.
Oh.
If you have a number that you are subscribed to.
So it's got the whole bottom navigation thingy-majig that we're supposed to get.
I never the bottom navigation
whatever
thing
navigation scheme that's coming to Android P, so you know that's there. I don't know much about the actual podcast finding, but
it's just a search.
You know,
I mean, that's
remember,
really most of what it is.
It did remember that I listened to the 90210 Blaze podcast the last time I used this podcast functionality in the Google Play Music app, and so when I came to, it surfaced that for me. Okay. Which was nice.
Yeah, so I mean it's important to know that the Google Podcasts app is really expanded functionality from the Google Search app. From what I understand, this is all residing in the Google Search app if you're up to date. The Google Podcasts as the app that you install from the Play Store is really just kind of a shortcut to launching this functionality within Search, right?
That's accurate. Yeah, it might also do some kind of media player bits and stuff, but it's very basic. This is just linking into the Google application,
and so as a result, a lot of this stuff. I mean, it's really based on Assistant. The idea being that when you launch a podcast here, you can see this in progress tab. This will show you where you are within your many podcasts. So if I was to go home and say, "Hey, G. Play the Material podcast," it would know the last episode that I was listening to, where I was within that podcast, and it would pick up playing from there. So there's some nice device handoff features as far as that's concerned.
Yeah. Sound wise, I had no problems. I mean, it was fine, but I'm just not used to this interface because I've been using Pocket Casts for so long.
Yeah, and it took me a little getting
used to. I'm so ingrained there, but I will say, as far as discovery goes, nobody's really met my needs in that sense. And I don't know. This
what do you mean?
Kinda,
it's not making discovery easy for
just,
you?
It overwhelms the heck out of me. It's just so much stuff. It's just so many little tiles and screens. Tiles and images is what I meant to say. I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just...
I didn't...
Somebody's got to help with it. This here is a little... This is what's static.
I didn't find the suggestions very useful. But I also think that podcasts are very... At this point, we're all so used to living with podcasts that it's kind of like we have the podcast that we listen to and... Discovery is something we do when we're ready to do it, not something we do passively, really. Like, rarely would I open this and be like, oh, there's something I've never heard before and jump in. Like, usually if I'm opening my podcast app, it's because I have the podcast
that's
I'm
true.
Listening to, and I know the one that I want to jump into and listen to right
that's
now.
That's true.
Definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I know
podcast is really good at that.
Yes, absolutely. And, I mean, there are many things that are... not featured in this app. They say and some things that are really interesting that are on the horizon I'll talk about in a second, but things you can do: subscribe, you can download, you've got your 30 second skip forward, 10 second skip backwards, playback speed, which I actually thought that increasing the playback speed the way that they do it here sounds actually really good for spoken dialogue stuff, music not as much, but if you like to do that, you're going to get a little bit of an improved sound out of this. Things that you don't get here: you don't get Chromecast support. You don't get auto download support, which seems strange to me in a podcast app, but it really seems, again, like this is more designed for search as opposed to being an all-featured podcast aggregator.
Well, it was made by a search company.
Exactly.
And they know how all
the
that
customer?
Indexing. So.
Does that serve the user? No playlist creation support. So if I wanted to like go in there and say, play this, then this, then this, then this. I want all the new episodes of all these podcasts to play one after the other. There's no support
there
for that yet.
There's your cleaning day.
No desktop support. I mean, these things can be added over time, and that's Google's mantra, right? Launch it so that it's out there, and then someday improve it.
It is 2018, and we do not have, I'm just saying, like, there's been time. Maybe I'm being impatient, I don't know. But it's 2018, everyone. Like, we've seen what a good podcast app looks like, Pocket Casts, you know, and we can garner from there.
Which is so fascinating to me, because Google cooperated with Pocket Casts on a material design, not
right.
2.0, but new material design, redesign, quite recently that they showcased at Google I.O. And then Pocket Casts announced that they were being bought by NPR and a group of other investors, right. Which was quite... That was very interesting. I found the sequence of events there fascinating. I think that Google will probably reach feature parity with Pocket Casts about a year and a half from now.
It's going to take a while, doesn't it always?
All right, I'm here, a year and a half from now.
Okay, we'll totally remember to check in on this and hold you accountable, David. I'm very impressed that on episode 273 of the Android Police podcast, you guys worked in some emoji into your podcast title. I'm just kind of impressed that that actually follows
through. We haven't done that yet?
No, we've never added actual emoji into our title. We're behind the times.
It's Unicode. It's standardized.
Yeah, you know, it's just never.
Oh, yeah, episode 273, we did do that. I'm surprised that it didn't cause anything to explode somewhere.
Wait.
Actually, it did, because our download numbers are like half of what they usually are for that episode. So
no way.
Break. Yeah, I don't know. That might have caused a problem somewhere.
Yeah, well, you notice you did never do it again. So that was a nice little...
we did just get a chat note.
Experimental message.
No, we can't do that.
Yes, Patrick DeLahanty here, who manages all of our podcast metadata stuff, says we cannot do that, and probably for that very reason.
Possibly.
It's important to talk about what Google plans to do. We've talked in the past about Google's kind of... recent reinvigoration around podcast, and that heavily involves search. It actually explains why this podcast app is appearing inside of the Google search app. And that's that Google plans to sick its AI onto podcasts in a number of creative ways. For example, one example is that if you subscribe to a podcast that was not in your native language, AI in the future is going to be able to do speech to text and then translate that into your language so you can read along with closed captioning in your own language. So you can actually listen to podcasts that are not in your native language. They also have plans on increasing search, which we've talked about in the past. And one could extend that out to this idea that, like, you know, then if the content within podcasts becomes searchable, that opens up opportunities for a lot of different things, a lot of stuff to be discovered by people who are searching Google or whatever that might not have run across it before because it wasn't in the title or the description. It was in the content of the podcast, and therefore they were able to reach it with their search query.
So this isn't about podcasts at all. This is just about a way
about
for Google
search.
To build its search abilities.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, in order for them to do that, they need to build out the foundation.
Precisely.
Have people used to getting their podcasts through
That's
Google,
actually so. Really crazy. Can you imagine searching for a piece of information and Google gives you a result like, oh, if you listen to this 35 seconds of this podcast, you'll get a brief summary of whatever you were looking for here. That's nuts.
Yes.
And that's not fair because I didn't have that in college. I had to listen to everything and I had to search all over.
Well, yeah, and I've worked in podcasts since 2006 now, and one of the recurring struggles, challenges, year after year after year over all that time was, how do we make the content within our podcasts reachable or searchable? And the only way to do that was to get it professionally transcribed, and that's expensive.
Ooh,
especially
yeah.
when you're producing hour to hour and a half shows multiple times every single day, every week, every month
of
the year.
We talk a lot.
Yeah, we do talk
we
a
do.
Lot. Sometimes a little too much. Yeah. So anyways, Google's solving a lot of this with this. So it's a little underwhelming now. I think I'm interested to see what it turns into. I don't think it's a replacement for Pocket Cast or whatever your podcast aggregator happens to be.
You perked up my ears. Now I'm like, well, now that makes total sense. This is just the foundation.
Yeah.
I think that once they can get the integration sorted out across all platforms, because they said, like, oh, we don't have any plans to bring this to iOS, which I call BS on. Like, you're wrong, Google. You definitely do have plans to do that. You just haven't decided you're going to do this. Yeah, of course you're going to bring
you
it to
You don't
iOS.
Know that you are, but you,
you don't,
are.
You don't know that you're going to do this, but you are. You're definitely going to do this. So I think once it syncs across your Google Homes, your Android TV, your Android Auto instance, and your phone, and, you know, maybe you have a tablet or a Chromebook. Once it does all of that, it might be harder to separate yourself from. Pocket Cast is great, but the number of services it's going to work seamlessly across, Google will probably always have better control over. So yep. There is that. And honestly, that's one of my biggest frustrations with podcasts, is I realize, oh, I really want to listen to this podcast, but I don't remember what I was listening to it last on, and I don't want to scroll through 15 minutes where I thought I might have been in this, you know, hour and a half long show.
Right. Oh, I've listened to this. Fast forward 5 minutes. Oh, I haven't heard this. 2 minutes later. No, wait a minute. I have heard this. Okay, I got to skip. Yeah, that's no fun. Google would have that figured out, at least to some degree here. So, you know, just another app of confusion. Considering there's so many podcast apps out there.
Yes.
All right. What else? Speaking of confusion, messaging on Android. Go.
Is this? Oh, well, yes. Messaging on Android is very confusing. I mean, we've established that long ago. But Android Messages got a web client this week, which I tried desperately to get to work today. And the update would not. I tried the APK and everything. It just did not populate for me on my phone for whatever reason. So I can't demo it for you, but you can try and demo it. Which is Android Messages for the web. Air horn. Imagine there's an air horn in there. And just for effect, it works exactly like it does on Allo. Scan a barcode and boom. There you go. It's on the internet. You've got your messages on the internet. QR code syncing. Other new features include gift search, which I also don't have. Smart replies, which I do have, and previews for links, which I also have. And I have to say, those last two features were, I was seeing those pop up like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So I think they were just rolling out slowly around the board. There's also a new feature that makes two-factor authentication via SMS easier with an auto copy for those codes. So I've also used this.
Yeah, and I've had that happen when I was using Hangouts for SMS, and a two-factor code would come through, and I think I would recognize this only happening on Google apps, so Google figured something out that other apps didn't, but once that message came through, the app would recognize it instead of me having to copy it and put it in, it would kind of do it for me. It's nice when that happens.
You put a little note in our doc that says Allo was abandoned for this, basically.
Yeah, that's It's true.
Which
this is what you get.
Let's not do the funeral march yet, okay?
No more Allo. This is what you get.
Let's not do the funeral march yet.
All right.
So I've used this. I have it enabled on my account, and which, if you want it, I've got a great tip. Just contact your best Google PR rep. And you'll have it immediately.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
It's super, super great consumer advice.
Yeah, everybody like listening,
sprinkles.
Do that.
It's magic sprinkles.
It's magic sprinkles. That's correct. I would say that so far, I use an app when I was on here last time. I recommended an app called Pulse. So this actually ties directly in. Pulse is a synchronized text messaging app. It stores all of your texts in the cloud, and then there's a web interface you can use on any browser to continue your texting, and basically it sends messages down to your phone, and then your phone sends them as SMS or MMS. Problem was, SMS was unreliable in terms of sync across devices, so if you had more than one phone they were using at any one point, it was just horrendous. Downloading and syncing everything every time you signed into a new phone was really terrible. And MMS basically may as well not have worked at all on the web. It was just like super broken. It could try to download an image, but it almost never worked. This works. MMS images download perfectly. I've not had any problems. The interface is nice and smooth. There are no weird load times or anything. Everything seems to be pretty real time. So when you're using the web interface, it seems to initiate an active connection with your phone so that it really is instantaneous, because you get a notification on your connected phone, hey, Android Messages is in use on the web, this persistent notification. It goes away if you leave the tab idle for like 5 minutes. So I would guess this is probably using a non-trivial amount of battery on your phone to have this tab open and used all the time. That said, it does mean instant gratification. Everything syncs across really quickly. Images download. Everything seems to work right. And that's what I wanted. And so you can have multiple PCs remembered. You can only use one at a time. So if you have it open on your desktop and you switch over to your laptop, your laptop's going to say, hey, you've got this open on another PC. Do you want to switch to this one? It'll say yes.
That makes sense.
It does.
Your device would connect to one computer at once.
Right. And you're only using one computer at once, and they want it to be abused, obviously. Right. So overall, I feel like messing around with this, they seem to have done it pretty well based on limitations of SMS. Once RCS kind of comes into the fold, assuming it really ever does, I really hope it does, This could be the Hangouts replacement that I wanted. We'll have to wait and see how long that really takes, though.
We'll have to wait and see. That is a tag that can often be applied to Google.
That is a tag that can be consistently applied to Google, unfortunately.
Really, that's the underlining theme of our entire series.
Wait and see. It's true. It's true. We all know that.
And
pain.
When it happens, it'll be announced on a Wednesday to be discussing all about Android.
Although, hey, Google learned. They put out podcasts this morning.
It's true.
Right? It was this morning or last night? Anyways,
it was this morning. The show, it was the first thing I saw when I woke up. I saw a little thing, which is bad. I was on Twitter first thing, but.
Oh, don't do that.
APK. I did it.
Okay,
it
all right.
APK Mirror. Was the first thing that came up, and then I was like,
do that.
There we go. Yeah, I'm just
wake up in APK Mirror. That's
actually a great idea. Why not see what new apps are out there?
Yes. Start your morning with APK Mirror each and every day.
Those would make great cereals, like just like little marshmallows that look like fave app icons.
APKOs.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Delicious. Custom theming with Substratum in a rootless method was, if you remember, we talked about it on the show, it was made pretty easy with Oreo. It didn't require root. It was kind of nice. You could do this little process. I think you would install the Andromeda app and do a quick connection, and then you could do it all without root. But then Android P came along with a new security-minded approach to system overlays, which is the method used by Substratum to install those custom themes on Oreo devices. Android P allowed overlays to be installed, but only those done by the system. And you couldn't even force a third-party overlay with root on Android P. Substratum posted a petition, users signed it in droves, and now Google has stated once and for all that the Overlay Manager Service, OMS, would not be available for generic theming outside of device manufacturers. So this is a feature that manufacturers are capable of using, not meant for the everyday user or the device hacker, enthusiast, whatever you want to call them. Essentially, Substratum on Android P is dead until a workaround is discovered, if that happens at all. So I'm pretty certain there are plenty of people out there that are sad to hear this. It really seemed with Oreo that there might be, like, this might be kind of a turning point for Google as far as Android theming was concerned. Like, hey, yeah, you know what? We've made it a little easier for you to do this and not requiring ROM and all this kind of stuff. Turns out it was just a security thing that they eventually patched up, and now no longer. That's all I got.
I don't think Android's supposed to work that way anymore.
I don't know. Google seems to be battening down the hatches.
Well, when you're creating a design paradigm that you want to like really resonate with consumers, you want them to use it.
You mean the stock design that Google's offering, or
yes,
you want them to be able to create their own themes?
You want them to be able to use what you have provided for them.
That's true.
Yes.
Android is also made of a lot of people that like to customize things to a T.
I know.
And historically, it's been very friendly to that. I guess there are probably other ways to theme, though, right? Or, I mean, maybe
this was the best one.
Yeah.
So I think that Google has kind of stated its intention in that, well, yeah, we're breaking this method. Honestly, the kind of party line that I've heard from Google is, we understand that these people are out there. We want to make sure that we're not doing something to unnecessarily upset people with what we're doing to the operating system. I wouldn't be surprised if long-term horizon, there's going to be something that can help get us partway there.
Yeah.
I think that the way Substratum worked was hacky. And so yes. Google wanted to not have hacky things, you know, that could potentially be exploited or break things or cause confusion to exist in the OS. That said, Google always has the best intentions. And sometimes it turns out the best intentions are like, well, we actually just are going to keep this broken and we don't have a replacement. So, okay, moving on.
So we'll go ahead and forget about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be what we have here, but that's a bummer. There's been a lot of talk about Substratum over the past year and a half. People are really excited about how easy it was. Not so much anymore.
Can I play Taps now?
I guess. I mean, do you have it?
Well, I had my finger on the button for a while.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you can play Taps if it tugs on your heartstrings. You can just play it underneath when we're talking. It's totally fine. Okay, we got our Taps in. Thank you, Victor. It's time to answer some emails. Actually, really a voicemail.
Yeah, let's jump into our first voicemail.
We've not had one in a long time.
No, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Long time, first time. I was calling because recently my Galaxy S9, that's my work phone, and then my personal phone, which is a Pixel 2 XL, I had to reset both, do factory resets on both. And this was after contacting Google support for the Pixel and Samsung support for the S9 separately and independently. Several issues with both phones, but bottom line is at the end, they both said, well, just try a factory reset, because everything else we tried didn't work. There was Wi-Fi issues on the Pixel and just general slowdown on the S9. So my question to y'all is, do you think there's ever any hope of this not being an option to where, you know, that's not the last straw of having to reset our phones? I know in years past, every Android device, after about a year or so, it just becomes sluggish with old crud to where you have to reset it anyways. And so I was just wondering if y'all think this is going to be something that will eventually be a thing of the past. Thanks a lot for all your work and love the show. Take care.
Thank you, Willie.
Willie, I share in your disgruntledness about this particular topic, because I too, whenever I encounter a problem, the last thing I want to do is factory reset, because I don't have time for that. I'm a busy woman. I have things to do. I have a household to run. I have a business to run, and I need things to run, and I can't be interrupted by a factory reset. And unfortunately, when you ask for help, usually from your carrier, where many people buy their phones in America, the first thing they'll tell you is to factory reset, because it does work.
Yeah.
In most instances.
It does. It really does, generally speaking. That is whenever I hear somebody, my phone is doing X really weird thing that clearly is not a widely experienced bug. Have you tried just erasing everything on it? And nobody likes to hear that answer.
No.
And I think that probably that's something to do with the fact that Apple has kind of trained people out of that, in part because on iPhones, actually, basically what ends up happening is people take their phone into the Genius Bar, and that's what the person at the Genius Bar does. They reset the phone, and then they do a restore of all the data on the phone, so your messages and photos and your app data and everything. On Android, that's harder to do. Unfortunately, I feel like with smartphones, that really does tend to be the best solution, is just to erase everything. And Samsung, actually, of all the brands, I would say probably right now does among the best job. If you're going Pixel to Pixel, like if you have a Pixel and you factory reset it, Google's over-the-air restore is pretty good. Mm-hmm. It backs up SMS now, so like it's pretty complete. You're going to have to sign into a bunch of stuff. That's the bummer. But beyond that, it works pretty well. And then Samsung's Smart Switch or whatever it is can restore pretty well too. But yeah, that's always what I go back to is, yeah, you've got a factory reset, because honestly, probably what's happening is you have a rogue app going on, and a lot of people don't end up knowing what the issue is. So it's a consistent issue on Android, and it's still what I recommend most often.
Yeah. And even what, yeah. What Willie was talking about as far as like the year later crud that builds up on your phone to the point to where factory resetting just kind of seems to start you from square one again, which is something that I, as a device reviewer, encounter very infrequently, because I'm always hopping from device to device. So there aren't a whole lot of times that I experience that, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I've been there. I have maybe the opposite problem, is that I'm always using different devices, so I always have to set them up. So it's like I'm factory resetting, and I will just say to that, well, it's just part of my job. I'd commit, except it's my job to play with all these devices. And I will give Google credit, especially, and Samsung, you're right, has done a good job of this. They've really worked on making it at least less painful when you have to factory reset everything, and being able to kind of restore some of that stuff from the cloud. I think I talked on the show a couple of weeks ago about how the OnePlus 6, when I set it up,
yes,
it created all of my apps from a different phone and logged in on a lot of those apps. I didn't even have to log in on them. They were just already logged in.
It took the pixel image.
Surprised me.
Of everything.
But so they're getting better at it.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Smart Lock is really great. And then autofill. Autofill is honestly one of Android's best features in years. Just being able to pick up the phone and be like, oh, autofill remembers my passwords for probably 80% of the stuff I sign on to on my phone anymore.
I certainly don't remember them.
Yep.
Yeah, it just makes life so much smoother. Granted, you do have to sign on in the first place, which is not the best, but at least you don't have to remember passwords anymore.
It's way better than it used to be. Kai wrote in to take us to task a little bit for last week. I made an incorrect statement about the Essential Phone. Kai said, the Essential Phone does not connect to the modular camera or the new modular headphone jack via Bluetooth through the Pogo Pin. I had said Pogo Pin was just for power and that the data was transferred through Bluetooth. That was my error. He said the data is transmitted via wireless USB. The Pogo Pins are for power only, and I did say that. That was just a good reminder. Wireless USB is way better than Bluetooth when it comes to data throughput. Bluetooth 3.0 and 4.0 works at a peak of 25 megabits per second. Wireless USB on Essential works at 10 gigabits per second. So you're getting a lot of data pass through. It's basically the same, it's basically the same thing as having something wired in via USB as far as data throughput is concerned. So when you're talking about high res audio information passing over that, you're not going to have any of those, issues that would happen from a slow data connection. So Kai, thank you for keeping us honest and reminding me about that, because I obviously forgot.
Tisk tisk.
Kai and then Kyle.
Kyle.
Lots of similar names.
Kyle wrote in, I think a great way to differentiate a podcast app and monetize at the same time is to add an integration that has a similar functionality as Patreon. This way, while you are listening, watching your podcasts, you could easily support the content providers. This would also create revenue for the podcast app by taking a cut. This Love and Use podcast.
Oh, I love
it. I love and use podcast. Pocket Cast, and I do support some of my podcasts using Patreon, but it would be nice to have it all in one place. And I agree.
It's a great idea.
And actually, I noticed this is a big thing. One of my favorite podcasts is Ask a Clean Person, which is hosted by Jolie Kerr, who does the column on the internet, Ask a Clean Person. And
A cleaning person?
Ask a Clean Person.
Ask
a clean person.
A clean. Oh, okay.
Yes, it's all about cleaning.
We have three different podcast ideas. Ask a cleaning person.
Yeah.
Ask a cling person. I don't know if that's Klingon or something. And ask a clean person.
Yeah, ask a clean person.
They could have a network. We're giving them free ideas.
There you go. But yeah, it's, as far as I know, she has a Patreon. There are a couple more people out there who have Patreons who sort of do this to help underwrite their bonus podcast episodes, for instance, kind of like make extra cash. And I mean, we live in a gig economy now. The gigs are in the physical space. We take cars and we hire people to do things for us and deliver our groceries. And now the gig economy is paying the content creators directly for everything they do.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about this, the more I'm kind of interested in this approach. Not personally, because I work for a network, so this is
I am interested because
I'm sure that you are.
I'm a loan agent.
When you translate it over, like, they're already doing this on YouTube, right? Creators
with Super Chat. I want to be tipped.
Creators are paid by their fans via Super Chat. I don't know how successful that is, but there's an analog here, right, David?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been super curious about how that works. Like, I mean, I don't personally understand tipping somebody who plays video games in front of you, but I understand that I'm also not from that generation of video gamer. So
right.
It is fascinating, though, you know, on YouTube and Twitch both, how that's shaping up. I would be curious to see how much money they do make through those avenues.
I tip some live YouTube DJs once in a while through Super Chat. Because a lot of these YouTube DJs are like kids in like South America and Europe who are just like playing music all day, and they're playing me work music.
Yeah.
So I figure I'll toss a dollar or two their way, help them pay for a cup of coffee here and there, you know.
Absolutely. That's great.
Which is nice.
That's awesome.
But that's what our economy's coming to.
Well, it's the fact that we have these options, that people have these options to do these things and still
get
paid for
it
from their community. Yeah. Ted in Fairfield, Ohio writes, bought new car receiver to replace the incredibly bad Entune infotainment system provided by Toyota. Android Auto was a must. I selected Pioneer AVH 2330 next for my car. Tech completed installation, and at the end of my training session said, now comes the cool part, Android Auto. He plugged phone into USB port, and phone began rapidly connecting and disconnecting to receiver. Android Auto wouldn't start. Turns out it's a known issue with Pixel XL phone connection to Pioneer units and Kenwood. The Geek Squad tech and I tried connecting the phone directly to the receiver, turning on USB debugging on the phone, and using recommended USB cables, and so far, nothing works. We've contacted Pixel support. They know it's a problem, suggested what we'd already tried. We're either going to replace the receiver, if we can find one that's compatible, or restore everything back the way it was. This experience has been incredibly frustrating, and thought it might be a springboard for a cautionary discussion on your show about thoroughly investigating car connectivity when purchasing car or phone. Food for thought. Love the show. That sounds like a nightmare.
It is. Yeah. It is a nightmare. Android Auto is a very difficult thing to get into your car if you want it to be a part of the head unit, because a lot of car, if you want to keep your car, which you spent a lot of money on, and you should rightfully so keep it if it's still working, why should you swap it out for something else just for some new infotainment? Yeah, exactly. It's a waste of money.
Yeah.
And the bummer is that in this instance, this is a perfectly swappable unit and it didn't work. And I would say that's a bad on the manufacturers for not optimizing it.
Oh, no. I think it's definitely on Kenwood and probably whoever else. JVC, I believe, makes some, too. But at the same time, having had cars where I've put in third-party stereos over the years, third-party stereos suck. Trusting them even with Bluetooth is just like, well, you get what you get. Something like this, Pioneer... I would be very hesitant. That said, one of our writers, Ryan Whitwam, has had no trouble, as far as I know, with a install in his Honda Civic. So it's a toss up, I guess. I mean, I understand the desire of people to upgrade these cars with the older systems. At the same time, I feel like that's quite an investment. I mean, these head units are usually at least $500. Yeah. And if you're not doing the install yourself, you're probably looking at least $200 to $300 for the install. Probably more if you go somewhere like Geek Squad. So I just feel like I look at these and I say, you know, you'd probably be happier with a Bluetooth head unit that's known working and good and a nice phone dock mount for your windshield.
Agreed.
And run the Android Auto app. You know, these head units with it built in, I wouldn't touch one with a 10-foot pole. I know some people have a lot of interest, but... me personally, as somebody with a car without Android Auto, it's supposed to get it eventually, and I could never install a second or a third party head unit anyway, but I would never get one. I would absolutely have no interest in that.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't even upgrade the head unit in my car. I would in a heartbeat because the one that's in there right now, the stock one, when my kids a couple of years ago, when they were too young to know what they were doing, shoved a CD in there and it got stuck. So now all I can do is radio. That's all I've had in there for 2 years. So
wow,
whatever. I have an external speaker and I figured a way around it. But I would love to swap it out, but
there's
I can't.
An aux port in there somewhere.
No, there isn't.
No?
It's 2005. It was the year before they started adding aux ports. So I had actually hacked it.
Totally splice one in.
I hacked it. I did that. I hacked it. And the only way to tap into the audio system was through the CD player. You had to have a blank CD playing. And when they got a CD stuck in there that will never come out, it canceled that.
Take it out of their college fund.
Find a good like car audio place and be like, I want to splice in an aux jack into my car. You can totally do it. Probably like $80.
Yeah,
I've
done some research. I think I've kind of given up at this point because I actually spent a couple of years trying to get creative with it and figuring it out.
My husband did that. He fished out my aux port because I had an iPod connection in there, like a proprietary 30 pin, and I'm like, I'm not using this anymore. Yeah. Like, we need to get this out of here. But you know, this brings a really good point in that when it comes to cars. There's so much disparity in the user experience. I don't think the Tesla model of the giant iPad screen is really feasible for a multiple number of reasons. Also because I just think it's incredibly unsafe to have that many things blaring at you while you're driving.
Huge screen.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to have tangible buttons there for a reason so you could pay attention to the road, not look at the screen. And I noticed that too when I have Android Auto on, that I'm usually looking at the screen on my phone instead of the road. And we got to decrease distractions on the road, not increase them by making these things difficult to use.
And getting a bunch of suggestions in the chat room. I should finish my thought on this, which is that the head unit in the car, because now that we're car audio, all about car audio, the head unit in my car is like 100% embedded into the AC
dash.
Unit.
Oh yeah.
So you get out the Dremel and you know some measuring tape and you cry.
Basically, I take a sledgehammer to it because there's no way around it. I found some kits that cost like $1,000, and I'm just at that point I'm like, you know what? It's a 2005 car. I'm not spending $1,000 on my car stereo. Yeah. I've got a solution. It's fine until we upgrade the car, which won't happen for a very long time. Anyways,
because in the real world, people don't swap cars out like that.
We don't swap cars like we swap phones.
I'm not leasing cars. I'm buying them and I'm driving them to the ground, people.
That's right.
Like, I'm not made of money.
Hey, it's a 2005. We've got 80,000 miles on it.
Yeah, and you have a good brand car, too.
Yeah, it's going to last. This sucker's going until the bitter end.
Near to our hearts.
Anyways, wow, I think we're a little long.
We are.
Do we have time for any of these other ones or should we just get to the arena? We should probably just get to the arena.
Yeah, let's just get to the arena.
All right, I think it's time. Let's jump into the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Oh, you're having a good time tonight. This is a fun show. I hope it is apparent. Twit.to/AAApoll 373 was where you went last week, or so we hope, to vote for your favorite app from that show. And Otter Voice Notes was the winner. 40%. That was Ron, right?
All right, go Ron.
Go Ron. As payback, you're not on tonight, so you're gonna lose some points because you're not here. Otter Voice Notes, 40%. Second place, Schwazi? Anyways, Yen Tudao's app. Schwazi Finger Chooser was second place at 29%. Third place, Clean Share. That was yours, Flo, right? 24%. And fourth place was Notion, 7%. Pretty sure you and I are going to be trading spots at the bottom here.
So the current standings, thanks to Wade County in the chat, through week 24, we are 24 weeks into the year, ladies and gentlemen.
Crazy.
Guests are flying high with 71 points. Ron is in second place with 66 points. Jason is in third place with 49 points. And I am last with 48 points. We are neck and neck right now, you and I.
Yeah, this could be
the guests continue to pulverize the three of us.
So no pressure, David.
Choices.
All right, so I'm the returning loser, so I will go. This is going to be a hard app to show because it integrates so much into your phone book, but there are certain things that I'll show you on the app. But anyways, I've complained on Twitter many times, and I've seen a lot of replies about, like, in relation to my complaints about spam calls, mm-hmm. and I just kind of figured it was a Project Fi thing, but it turns out everybody's getting tons of spam calls now. You know, they're replicating your area code, so it looks like it could possibly be someone you know, but you don't have their number in your contacts list. You don't know whether to pick it up or not. Every once in a while, Google's own phone system or phone app will detect this and will give you that red banded alert that says spam caller. And then you can choose to ignore it or swipe to go directly to voicemail. Although I'm convinced that if you swipe to go directly to voicemail, they know this because it stops ringing earlier. Yes. And then they keep calling because they're like, someone was there and they did that. So I don't do that. But anyways, where am I going? An app called Mr. Mobile, which I had forgotten about. This is an app that's been around for a long time. But basically, it's a way to kind of help you manage. It almost creates like a social network of sorts around spam calls. So for example, I got a call earlier today, and when it came up, I got a little Mr. Mobile pop-up. Often what I've found is that if the Google Phones app might recognize that something is spam, but it doesn't know anything further than that, Mr. Mobile has like all this extra information. So is it Mr. Mobile? Mr. Number. Sorry, this isn't
Michael
Fisher's official app. Although maybe he needs to do that. Mr. Number. Sorry, Michael. You need to get in the app dev business. Mr. Number. There we go. Thank you, chat room. So Mr. Number will give you all of this extra information about that incoming call. So, for example, I got the call. I think it was a red band thing inside of Google, inside of the Google Phone app. But Mr. Number had an overlay that allowed me to actually actively block it. So the next time that phone call comes through from that particular number, if it recognizes it, it will just send it directly to voicemail. So I don't even see it and I'm not bothered by it. But it also gives you all of these user reports. In this case, on this one particular number, there are 50 user reports. Says my account has been hacked. Microsoft scam. Windows scam. Scam regarding Microsoft on my computer and something being obsolete. And on and on and on. All these people that got a number from this right here, don't call it, please. Don't call it and tell them that they suck. You know, all of those people have reported here about this spam or scam call. And so you have further reason to understand and believe that this is actually a call you don't want to touch with the 10-foot pole. And you can also, you know, make those reports as well. I blocked the call. I don't need to worry about it. You get some extra information as far as like where it's actually coming from and all that sort of stuff. But I could report it. I could say what it is, you know, general spam, give some information as far as what it is. And then that's going to add that to their database. And anyone else that gets a call from that number, they're going to be able to ignore it. And that's kind of the awesome aspects of Mr. Number. Not Mr. Mobile, although that also makes sense, but it's Mr. Number is what it actually is. And yeah, I'm trying to think if there's other aspects to this. I mean, you're able to, you know, do a lot of just analysis on your incoming calls, be it scam and fraud calls. You can choose whether to block them or to show a warning and give you some of that extra information on the incoming call so that, you know, if you don't want them to all be automatically blocked and sent to your voicemail, you can still see them and then choose what to do on an item by item basis. But yeah, it's pretty great. It's called Mr. Number. And you should check it out. And maybe it gives you a little bit of extra information that the Google Phone app does not. And it might give you the information you need to ignore that call that's coming in. Mr. Number. All right, David, your app I do not have installed because it's a Samsung app. But tell me why it's awesome. Tell our listeners why it's awesome. Uh-oh, hold on. Tell us again because I think you were muted.
So this one is only for those of you with Samsung phones. And I was muted. Anyway, so this app is called GoodLock, which you've probably heard of it before if you've been a longtime Samsung user, or at least if you're somebody who's used Samsung's apps in the past. Samsung previously had this really cool app called GoodLock on its phones. It would let you customize lock screen on the phone quite a bit. It also did some other stuff. We heard earlier, like I think late last week or early this week, that, oh, Samsung's working on a new version called GoodLock 2018. And it's been years since this app's been around, probably like 3 years. And so we saw some screenshots, and then bam, this week the app's out. So it doesn't just let you customize your lock screen, although it does do that. And there's a lot of stuff you can do with the lock screen. There are other extensions you can install into the GoodLock app. LockStar, QuickStar, Task Changer, and Routines. Basically, all of these do different stuff. So the LockStar app is the sub app, I should say, lets you customize your lock screen. So you can change what shortcuts are on there. You can change the appearance beyond what's on the phone already. There's QuickStar, which lets you customize the quick settings panel, basically. There's the Task Changer, which lets you change how the like app switcher looks, essentially, and some minor functional changes. There are routines, which are kind of like if this, then that for your local device, which are kind of interesting. There's also some stuff you can do with the edge lighting, one-handed gestures, some stuff for like sounds. I don't know what sound stuff does. I haven't even looked. This app is extensive. So once you download all the various extensions that work with it, this touches a lot of areas of Samsung smartphones. It will let you customize your phone in ways that probably you hadn't really considered before, or if you had, you know, that the operating system really didn't let you do. So this app is really cool. If you're, you know, if you're really into your Samsung phones, I would say this is definitely worth checking out without a doubt. I'm sure there are some neat little features in there that, you know, I haven't really explored just yet personally, but based on the original app and what this app, you know, kind of stands for, which is enhanced customization of your phone, which a lot of people, you know, who are enthusiasts really do want. This can change colors. It can change functionality. It can change the order of things, you know, just make life a little easier for you. I think it's absolutely worth checking out. If you have a Samsung phone, unfortunately, it doesn't work with non-Samsung phones because all of this stuff is really specific to Galaxy phones. But, I mean, it kind of bewilders me that this stuff isn't there out of the box. I guess maybe it's too confusing for some people. But honestly, like if I was using a S9, you know, daily, I would download this immediately and check it out. It's definitely worth your time, and it will help you customize and personalize your phone. And maybe make it a little easier and more convenient to use, too, along the way. So you can get it from the Samsung Galaxy App Store. Unfortunately, it's not on Google Play. But you can also get it from apkmirror.com. We have it.
Yeah. You can trust apkmirror.com.
You can.
It's from the same folks that do Android Police. So, you know, you can trust it. Very cool stuff. Yeah. I wonder if it has any hooks into Bixby. Once you get it going, Samsung's other favorite thing.
I love Bixby.
Do you miss Bixby? No. Okay.
No. Chirp, nobody chirp, mixes chirp, Bixby.
I think I knew the answer to that question before I actually said it. Excellent. That is Samsung GoodLock, and you won't find that in the Play Store. You will find it on the Samsung Marketplace. But there. Definitely check out the Android Police article. It gives you all the information and a link to the APK Mirror site to download it. Flo, you are up next.
I've just got a simple little app I brought to the table today. Let me fire it up right now.
Fire it up.
You know, it's summertime, and summertime calls for hot nights, if we're lucky. Oh, God, don't tell me. Okay, you better. Yes, okay, good. I was worried it wasn't loading for a second. So summertime calls for warm nights out in the backyard, hopefully not too much light pollution, and while you're just looking up at the stars and seeing what's going on up there. But what you might be looking at is probably maybe not a star, it's actually a satellite. And well, if you want to figure out what satellite's flying over you, there's an app for that. This app is called Satellite Tracker. I just, you know, was cruising around in the Play Store for some tracking app, something to add to my folder with my flight radar. And I found this one. And it's a pretty simple satellite tracking app. You select how you would like to search for a satellite. You could search by radius. You could search just by, like, there's a globe mechanism you'll see. You can search by satellite name if you know the name of the satellite you'd like to find. Or you can do a map search, which will search wherever you want it to. So we're going to do that one. And I'm going to point to a spot and we're going to figure out what is flying over us right now, if anything. So as you can see, this is a map of the world that we are in right now. This is Earth. And if I zoom in over here, I'm going to zoom in right above San Francisco. Okay, there's Santa Rosa. We're getting closer. Okay, so we're right about here. I'm just going to... Boom, there's Petaluma. All right, so I'm going to confirm this point. And now it is going to show us... Okay, use pinch and expand gestures. So I'm going... You can expand... Confirm. How much of the radius you want, okay. Or you can make it smaller if you would like it to be very, like, obvious. I'm going to just make it bigger for the sake of this. Confirm your radius, and then confirm your category, and then boom, there you go. You got satellites.
All those satellites are above us right
All
now?
All those satellites are flying above us right now, so...
Is that the Space
this
Force?
This is called the MOST satellite.
This is really cool. Don't forget mine. This is really, really fascinating.
Here we've got the radar SAT-2, which is flying really fast. Here over the ocean, we've got ChefSat.
What is the ChefSat?
So here's the thing. You're going to have to go Google it. The app doesn't take you to any description of what these satellites are, but it does give you the names of them, and you can see the trajectory where, like, they just last flew from, like, what their trajectory has been on its way to you. It's just kind of, let's see if I zoom all the way out, just kind of shows you, like, it's all going around the Earth.
That's cool.
It's, you know, it's just a reminder that we're not alone.
that the truth is out there.
The truth is out there, but it's also a reminder that what you're seeing in the sky probably isn't an unidentified flying object. It's probably, also this tracks space debris, which is the other thing that I wanted to mention. So you could just be looking at junk in space that somebody tossed out of the ISS, which is very possible. Dear astronauts, please stop polluting the space.
We're running out of space. Quit polluting it.
I saw the other day one that said asteroid, which I was like, I wonder if that's an asteroid. So, like, obviously you have to go and Google these things, but I think it's just a fun little free app. It does have ads, but you can contribute 99 cents, support your devs, $1. You could probably make that up in Google surveys. And you can do auto refresh if you need to kind of refresh that up. And it's just a very simple
That's
app.
Neat.
Figure out what's flying up above you.
I like it.
I always want to know. The truth is out there.
Do, 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 do. Satellite Tracker is the name of that app.
And the ChefSat is a cost-effective high E-frequency satellite.
According
to
NASA. I think NASA might know.
Yeah.
Well, that would explain why it's flying over us, maybe, right? You know, beaming down NASA.
I thought it might have something to do with food.
So did I. I was like, man, I hope there's like some...
It was the Swedish chef.
Beef stroganoff on there. Yeah.
Flying overhead. All right, twit.to/AAApoll374 to vote for your favorite app this week. Is it Mr. Number, Samsung Goodlock, or Satellite Tracker? I'm wondering if I put Mr. Mobile on the vote, on the poll. No, I did not. Okay, good. Mr. Number is there. Well, that's what it should be.
Maybe he would have won if he would have done that.
Yeah, he would have won if that was the case. All right, you can place your vote at twit.to/AAApoll374 as Victor is about to do right now. Satellite Tracker gets Victor's vote.
Because Victor is a Bay Area kid like me, and he knows sitting outside at night and watching those stars. Don't you, Victor?
Yep.
There you go.
That was such a ringing endorsement.
No, it sounds cool. Sounds fun.
Uh-huh.
It does.
Yep.
Right on. All right, we will check in on this next week and see if the guest can pull through. Although it's a Samsung app, that might be a limiting factor in some way, shape, or
Why
form.
Why did you have to put that into the environment, Jason? You didn't have to put that into the world.
I'm just saying. Just saying.
You didn't have to put that out there.
You're right, I didn't. I don't know. I'm
voting for the satellite app, so honestly, yeah, probably wasn't a great idea.
Well, and we did throw him have to do a mulligan very last minute. My apologies on that. But regardless, the guests are running away with it this year, and so even if it doesn't, you're lifted up by all the other guests that are doing amazing as well. So y'all win. If one of you wins, you all win. David Ruddock, it's always awesome to get you on the show. Maybe next time we can get you in the studio, you can eat some expired Oreos with us.
Yeah, I would love that.
Maybe pie by that time.
Maybe.
Or pie, yes.
Yeah.
Android pie.
Yes.
Do you have a, is there a pea dessert that you are feeling pretty confident about?
Ooh, I don't know. I feel like Pez. I really want Pez to be the one. Right. I just want the dispenser.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the candy is vile, but I want the dispenser.
The dispenser would be pretty awesome. You could see a total line of collectibles.
Which, okay, I actually found out something interesting, kind of a fun factoid that could make Pez more likely. They are a family-owned business. So Pez actually, the family that owned Pez originally bought back the company from a larger conglomerate that owned it, I guess, like, I don't know, sometime in the last 15 years or something. So I feel like Google could probably swing something with the Pez family. So
true.
Maybe.
That'd be a good band. That'd be a good score for Pez, too.
They seem to be on brand. They've got Jurassic World and Crayola, and totally, it could happen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at those Incredibles.
Incredibles, too.
Especially when you consider the Android kind of be together, not the same campaign where there are, I mean, you know, what is the app? What is the app where you can create your Android?
Androidify me.
Where you can create all these different combinations. Maybe they have a relationship with Pez that you can turn your Androidify me into a personalized Pez dispenser. Huh?
Ooh.
Huh? That one's free.
That would
Google.
Make them a lot of money.
Yeah, that might be really costly to actually do, but it'd be cool. It's not impossible. Anyways, getting off topic, David Ruddock, we really appreciate you having you taking time to join us on the show today. Thank you, and we would love to have you back soon.
Thanks for having me. Really enjoy being on.
Absolutely. Tell people where you want them to follow you, because I know things have changed.
I don't want people to follow me on Twitter, but if for some reason you want to do that, it's RDRV3. I've simplified my Twitter handle. I'm there. I'm also on AndroidPolice.com occasionally, I guess. I work there or something. I don't know what the deal is.
Yeah. You probably find David all over AndroidPolice.com. You probably already do, actually. But again, David, we'll have you back very soon. We appreciate it. And next time we'll get you up here.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks.
What about you, Flo? What's up? What's new?
I'm working.
You're working?
I'm working. I'm working really hard right now and know how.
Like really, really hard.
Oh. Really hard to secure all those things for know-how. Megan and I are working behind the scenes to bring you this great summer show about the Internet of Things. So tune in beginning July 5th. That's the day after the great Independence Day of our fair country, the United States of America. Please tune in. And also tune into FlorenceIron.com, where I blog about my work and, I don't know, maybe I'll blog about other stuff. I'm just writing.
You're busy.
I'm trying to stay busy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to stay busy.
I don't think you have to try anymore. I think you just got so many things going on right now. You're busy. No try about it. Only do.
Yeah.
Right?
Precisely.
Did Yoda say that or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did he?
Yes, he's something like that. Victor, save me. What did Yoda say?
Pretty much along those lines.
There is no try, only do, or something like that.
Trust no one. The truth is out there.
Either way, Luke didn't listen to him, so.
Yeah.
It's true. He didn't.
Fair enough. Victor, thank you. Appreciate everything you do, including creating awesome surprise bumpers for us. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. It was fun.
And you can find me here on the Twit Network. Do lots of shows here each and every week. Also, yellowgoldmusic.com. If you want to check out some music that I spent some time making, you can. It's there, but it's also on Spotify and Google Play Music and probably YouTube Music and other places. Just do a search for Yellow Gold if you want to find it. But that's it for this week. Voicemails can be left. Like, we got a voicemail today. We never get that. You can do that. 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us emails at AAA@twit.tv. Find us on Twitter. We're at Android Show. Arena Apps List can be found at twit.to/Android apps. All the apps that we talk about are listed there. So you can find links to those apps from there. Show notes and past episodes can be found at our show place on the web, our one page that has everything you need, twit.tv/AAA, including a header image that always cracks me up. But all the information there can be found. You can also get links to all of our past episodes, subscribe to our show in audio and video form
And find us on Twitter there as well. If you want to watch us live, you can do that. Send an email to tickets@twit.tv if you're going to be in the area and you can come sit in. Or probably what you're going to do is check it out live on the internet. That's every Tuesday starting at 5 p.m. Pacific at twit.tv/live. That is it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Teaser Oreo.
No.
I've got something special today in celebration of Android
yes.
P, because we still don't know what the P in Android P stands
yes.
for, and calling it Android P just feels weird. I want to have a name to give to it, and I'm thinking that it might have something to do with today's Oreo flavor. Pumpkin spice.
Oh, my God. How old are these?
Never mind. Never mind, Flo. I'm not telling you. I'm going to cover it up. And we're not going to see. But let me just guarantee you that they are fresh and they're ready to be eaten.
Limited edition.
I've got a cover up over here so you don't see definitely what how old they are. Okay.
I'm really regretting not coming in for this.
Yeah, you should be here for these totally fresh, not at all ordered online.
Not at all.
Oreos that just kind of fall apart very easily. Nope. Get away, little hand. Away. It's not your turn.
I don't know
Flo,
if you want these little hands.
Flo gets these before you do.
They only expired like 5 months ago. It's okay.
Well, let me see here. Let me do the math.
4 months ago, excuse me.
Yeah, 4 months. You're right. 4 months ago. Why? Did you happen to see the expiration date that's
I was very
printed
curious.
On the package?
All right. Sorry, my hair is falling apart now.
You know, this is only half food anyways. The rest of it's preservatives. I'm
it
sure
looks,
it's fine.
Like, you know when pumpkin pie gets kind of congealed after you've left it out for a while?
Oh,
like,
you're,
that's
you're
what,
selling
that's
it.
That's what it looks like.
You're selling it.
Like, you know when it kind of... Oh, wow. It smells like a candle, like a pumpkin spice candle.
Oh, I'd be absolutely...
I was not ready
there.
For that
totally
smell. I was not ready for the smell.
It really does smell like a candle.
Like it's too summer this right is, now for this.
Yeah, this is right. This is very there much a fall candle.
Oh, it's very greasy too.
All right. It's so in honor of you, David, we are going to eat one of these. You wish you were here. Next time you'll come in and you'll eat an Oreo with us.
Is the P for preservative?
I will say the cookie itself is maybe not as crispy and crunchy as it would be.
These are awful.
That's unfortunate.
I'm not finishing this. This is awful.
Well, you guys are chewing on that. Are you ready to regret opening that package?
I don't know. Why? What are you about to tell us?
These are the prices on Amazon right now for...
Oh, boy. We could have made some money.
Whoa.
Now, this is a two-pack, though.
Oh, still...
Still, yeah, no, I didn't pay that much. I've been known to pay a lot for Oreo cookies and get them shipped in
I'm
very large boxes.
I'm not doing this anymore, Jason. I'm not doing
don't,
this anymore.
You don't need
Are there people who collect these, like Beanie Babies or something? Like,
I think probably
this,
so.
This completely baffles me.
Yeah. I mean, you can buy outdated, as evidenced by this package, you can buy outdated
Oreos. And also,
Oreos
I think
online.
The reason
people
they're
just
not
have them laying around.
Crunchy is because they're stale.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Like, it's normally
they
it would
taste
be
like the...
really crispy and crunchy. Maybe crispy is the wrong word, but crunchy.
Why aren't Oreos hermetically sealed? I mean, they should be for maximum crisp.
You'd think. But, you know, we are eating them 4 months
hand,
after the expiration.
You don't want these. Trust
Go
me.
It. Go for it, little hand. Those are yours.
Okay,
you
I want
can
everybody
finish
to
the
see
bag.
I'm not... finishing this.
Yeah,
this
so much about this show has changed. I'm not sure I'm good with this appearance anymore.
Don't worry. This is post-show or pre-show.
I need to put some goldfish in my mouth so I can... I'm throwing that in there, which I'm going to throw after the show.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think it's been almost a year since you were on last, and I don't know if we were doing the Oreo tastings last time you were on.
No, I don't think so, but I have seen them, and I do envy all of your Oreo tastings. I would like to try all of the flavors. I bet I would hate most of them.
I think after a while, you just kind of get numb to the flavors, I think. At this point, I hardly taste anything.
I was not numb to this flavor. This flavor.
All right. So do you think, okay. So first of all, what is your rating? And second, is it based on the staleness, the freshness factor or the flavor factor?
It's the flavor.
Okay.
It's horrid.
And what do you give it?
One. This
Ooh,
is
wow.
terrible.
Wow,
I didn't
bottom
finish
of the
it.
Barrel.
I didn't finish it. So it's a one.
Okay. The little hand has something to say too, if you want to cut to the overhead.
I think the little hand might have something to tell
like,
you.
No, thank you.
The little hand didn't eat all of it either.
It's horrid.
It's hard to know what my rating is based on, but I know I didn't like what I ate. I will go marginally better than you and go 2.5.
Are we saying like musty Glade candle you found in the drawer?
It is exactly like a Glade candle.
It's kind of Glade candle-y.
Oh, yeah. that sounds really unpleasant. My curiosity even more piqued.
If I brought that smell of candle home, like that candle would have been thrown out on the sidewalk because that is like not okay. That is
maybe it's just the wrong time of year
pumpkin.
Because you know when October happens,
I'm not
and everybody's
a PSL
like,
"Yay, person.
Pumpkin!"
No, 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 no. I'm not a PSL person. I've never been. I like a good piece of pumpkin pie with some whipped cream only on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Any other day is.
It's just too much.
What about breakfast the day after?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you follow that with a turkey sandwich at lunch. And then for dinner, you have turkey tetrazzini. No, you have turkey tetrazzini. You got to use all the turkey, Jason.
I mean, you move on from the pumpkin, though, at that point. You're like,
no,
I've
you
done
don't.
The
you have it for
thing.
Breakfast until it's finished because Costco sells really big pies.
They do.
And
that's
they are.
Where we
they're
always
really
get
large.
One pecan and one pumpkin.
They're pretty good. So, so what we're saying is we really hope that pumpkin spice is not Android Peas dessert.
Oh, why would they do that? I think it would turn away.
If the event's in October, it actually makes a lot of sense.
We've done too
well,
much.
Well, no, wait. No, you're right. They're going to, that's right. That's the hardware event. The name we're going to know well in advance.
America has flubbed too much up on this point. We cannot call it Android Pumpkin. I am asking you, Google, do not call it Android Pumpkin Pie. It might hurt Android, I think.
I have to know if you guys have broached the possibility of it being Android Pez.
Did that come up last week? I know that we talked about some options for names. Pez did not end up on our short list of things we thought it might actually end up being.
It's so good. It's like you could have like Android Pez dispensers.
Exactly.
It's perfect.
Yeah, no, it is perfect. It's
don't
good.
Get me wrong. Pez are terrible, but like I want an Android Pez dispenser.
That would be pretty cool.
I like the Cola Pez. I'll do a sleeve of Cola Pez.
Hmm. Oh, it's been so long since I've had those. I forgot those even existed.
Yeah. You can buy them and then put them in the Pez dispenser so you don't have to eat the weird pinky ones.
Yeah, they're like Valentine hearts, but worse. I mean, they're just chalk and sugar.
Yeah, basically. You're eating chalk. Yes, with lightly sweetened chalk.